This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
We have allowed ourselves to become so disconnected and ignorant about something that is as intimate as the food that we eat.
Be prepared to grow your own for victory.
God said I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to yean lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink foamed pullets who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. So God made a farmer.
Well, hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornbrough, and glad you're joining me again this week. Got another great one for you. Got an interview with the author of the blog WellFedHomestead.com, Brenda Scott. A great guest today. And, this one's more for the folks who find themselves in a situation where maybe you don't have a big homestead. Maybe you're just starting out. Maybe you're in a situation like I was a few years ago and still am, really. But I was in a place where I thought, you know, I can't grow a lot where I'm at. What am I going to do? And then I kind of discovered that there was a lot I could do right where I was at. And this one's going to be for that person today. We're going to talk a lot about the things you can do right where you're at, even if you wouldn't consider yourself on a great location for a homestead. We're going to look at what might be a lot of limitations in a situation like that, and look at a few of the things you can do even though you're in that situation. So I think it's just a great one for the people who find themselves in a place like that. I think you'll enjoy the guest today as we talk about those things. Before we jump into that, though, I thought I'd just give you a quick update of what's going on here on my homestead. And let's see, the new garden area that I put in up beside my house. I'm loving that. I got a mulch down and all the around the beds this week, and so for our little pathways, even set out some containers of potatoes in between the trees up in that area. I still have one whole side I have to kind of clean up and plant and work that over, but all the new raised beds I built are all planted now, and things are just going really good. We've had some really good weather these last few days, and just the right amount of rain with the right amount of sunshine, and it was just everything was almost perfect this week for a garden, and it just went really, really well. So just been doing that, getting that fixed up, doing a lot of home maintenance, as I've mentioned a couple times before recently, is that I'm off work right now because of the quarantine stuff that's going on, and you should be going back here in about another week, but in the meantime, trying to get a lot of things done around here. It's a great opportunity for me to get the gardens caught up and get some home maintenance done. And see, right now I've got another batch of quail eggs in the incubator I'm looking at right now. And those have about 11 more days, and we'll be hatching some more quail. And just a lot of things going on around here, right now. A lot of people complaining because they're bored, you know, at home. But I'm never bored at home. I've always got a lot of things to do. Matter of fact, I could probably use a couple more months off if I had to, just to get things really caught up. But it's really good. I'll be anxious to get back to work and kind of get things back to normal. But like I said, in the meantime, get as much done as we can around here. And I've been really working hard. And it's just been a lot of maintenance stuff, you know. With homesteading, that's a lot of times what it is. You know, you're fixing some boards, you're fixing some fence, you're you know, repairing this or doing that, or, you know, planting this. And it's just a lot of things, you know. It's been an opportunity to just clean things up and get things looking good again for a summer. You know, winters are hard on a homestead, and everything kind of, I don't know, it takes some wear and tear over the winter, and especially an Indiana winter. So, you know, it's just a great opportunity to kind of get things back in shape. So I'm just taking advantage of that. But enough of that. Let's just jump right into this this great interview I had with Brenda. And I think you're really, really going to enjoy this. Well, today I'm joined by Brenda. She is author of the blog Well Fed Homestead, and she's homesteading. Well, she went from a rather large farm to a kind of a small situation where she's trying to kind of reestablish homesteading where she's at. But Brenda, welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here today.
Well, I'm really glad to have you. And I guess we'll just start off letting you kind of tell your story. Now, I've seen in an email you sent me that you actually used to live in Oregon, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So you kind of so moved out to Virginia from there, huh?
Yes, we did. Yes, we just recently moved to Virginia. We used to, own a 30-acre farm in Oregon, and we raised every animal you can think of, a traditional homesteading farm animal. We were primarily focused on pastured chickens, and we had layers, lots of laying hens, and we did dairy cows, and we did beef and turkey and ducks and geese. And we went to farmers markets and sold there. We went to 3 farmers markets per week. And so, yeah, this is kind of a different life. We're living on an almost quarter acre lot in a neighborhood now. Quite different.
Well, let's back up a little bit before you got to the farm and what kind of led you into that lifestyle. Was it something you always wanted to do? Is it something you did always do when you were raised doing that? What got you to the 30-acre farm in the first place?
Yeah, I wasn't raised doing that, and neither was my husband. My husband's grandparents owned 280 acres in Montana, and they were farmers their entire life. Mm. But my husband, he grew up on just an acre, and they had maybe one cow or a goose or something at a time. But I grew up in a neighborhood, and honestly, just watching Little House on the Prairie. I guess when we lived in the neighborhood before the farm, I wanted to start learning how to do things myself. So I guess I had this gut feeling that our food is so important for survival, and that I needed to have some knowledge about that.
Yeah. Wanted to be a little more self-sufficient, huh?
Yes. So I started checking out all of the homesteading books from the library, and I would check them out and recheck them out and keep renewing until I eventually just bought them myself. we put in at our neighborhood home before the farm, we put in fruit trees and a large garden, and I started making cheese and making butter and yogurt and learning those kinds of homesteading skills.
So it just kind of went from there, and you just couldn't get enough of it for a while, and ended up on a 30-acre farm. And then we heard a little bit about that. So what? So why the move to Virginia and kind of the start over?
Yes. So the move to Virginia, kind of a long story, but all of my family actually moved out to Tennessee. Mm. So 65 people from my family moved to Tennessee. And my husband couldn't get a job there. In his job that he had, he could work in Virginia. And so we're in driving distance of my family. So it was the closest state he could legally work in and be close to my family. So, and we moved to a town where we're near the college our son would like to attend. Okay. So that's why. Yeah.
So now you're kind of starting over. You gave up the 30 acres, but you haven't escaped the homesteading desire. So what kind of things are you doing or planning on doing right where you're at?
Yeah. So we don't have a very large backyard. It's mostly out front. But in the backyard, I have a garden tower going and several pots all around. And I am growing starts in little pots, and I have raspberries and blackberries and blueberries, and a couple fruit trees in pots, large pots going. And then I feel like part of the homesteading life also is some of the indoor stuff, like I'm doing a gluten-free sourdough starter, because I have to eat gluten-free, and kombucha and water kefir, and I keep up on all of that, and I feel like that's part of the sustaining ourselves and the homesteading life. So
Well, I find that really inspiring because, you know, a lot of folks are in a situation, and now that you're ahead of the game where a lot of folks are because you already have the knowledge of a lot of this stuff. You've already done it. You're kind of starting over, but you already have you have some wisdom when it comes to growing things and raising animals and things like that. So you're kind of starting fresh, but not completely from new. But there's so many people right now that are getting into homesteading that never probably thought about it before, just because of the things that are going on in the world with the food shortages and the scare of maybe possible future food shortages. So there's a lot of people thinking, you know, I'd like to grow some of my own food. So I find it really inspiring that, you know, even someone like you who comes from that background a little bit, you know, you're kind of starting over. You're having to do the same thing, and you're not in an ideal situation for it. So you're going to have to figure it out with a lot of other people, but you see the value in it.
Yes, definitely. Yes. And it's disappointing. I learned this week that we cannot have chickens on our lot.
Yeah.
So that's discouraging because we are just shy of a quarter acre, and that's our county's rule, is that the lot is at least a quarter acre.
Oh. Yeah, that it probably wouldn't hurt so bad if it wasn't so close.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's too bad. I mean, you know, I don't know, like with me, you know, it's like, we're not allowed to have chickens either where I live. And, you know, I've made some other decisions to do other things, but, you know, I mean, there's still so much that you can do. I mean, even if you have to buy those things that you can't do, you know, do the things you can do. And I think, again, that's where a lot of folks are. You know, it's like, it's for some people, it feels like all or nothing, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
I can't do everything. I just don't know if it's worth doing anything, but it's not true. I mean, you do everything you can and then perhaps support the people who are doing it like you would want to do it, you know, with what's left. I think it's a good way to do it.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, we're big farmers market supporters right now. We can't go to them, but I think it's really important to support those local farms because they're growing the stuff we can't grow. They're raising the chickens and the beef and the pork. And so I think it's really important to support them.
Yeah. And like you pointed out earlier, it's also, you know, homesteading so much more than just gardening and raising animals. I mean, it does carry into the house. And I mean, there's so much you can do in there that anybody could do no matter where you live. Even if you have to purchase the stuff to do it. I mean, you can learn to cook from scratch. You can, you know, you can ferment things. I mean, you can do all these things in your house.
Right. Right. And making yogurt, for example, is very easy. Mm-hmm. So I make that. Keeping up water kefir and kombucha, those are easy. It's just little weekly tasks I have to maintain. And I just learned yesterday, I was reading about what I could do with the extra kombucha SCOBY, and I was starting to write about this on a post. I can add little bits of kombucha SCOBY to the soil around some of my acid-loving plants. So I'm experimenting with that.
Yeah, yeah. I went through that same phase with, I was making a lot of kombucha and I had these SCOBYs, leftover SCOBYs. I'm like, what do I do with these? You know, cause for my area, believe it or not, I mean, there's just not a lot of people around here where I live that are really into drinking it. It's just not a big thing around here, you know, so it's not like people are begging for SCOBYs around here to hand them out. I think anybody in my area that's wanted one, I've given them one. So there's nobody left to give one to. But, yeah, I was looking for things to do. And people's like, feed them to your chickens or put them in your garden or put them in your compost bin. And you're just naming all these things you could do with them. And there was a pretty good list that came rolling in on me one time with things I could do with it, you know.
Yes. Yes. I saw one the other day, a list of what to do with kombucha SCOBYs, and it said to use it as a mask. And I think it meant for cleaning out your pores. But with the culture we're in right now, I immediately interpreted that as an N95, like a respirator mask. I was laughing at how would you make that out of a kombucha SCOBY? So,
yeah, you look a little funny walking around in public with that hanging off your face.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, and again, there's so much you can do. I mean, now – What are your thoughts on like even buying food from a farmer's market or even from a grocery store in bulk? I mean, sometimes you get good deals on things or farm stands and things like that. And when you're not in a situation where you can grow a lot of food, I mean, what are your thoughts on, you know, buying a lot of that stuff in bulk and preserving it and putting it up and, you know, things like that?
Oh, yes. I think that's a great idea. Yeah. And one of the things that we can take I think America in general, but I think actually other countries too, probably throw out a lot of food that we don't need to throw out. So when food, mm-hmm. like vegetables are about to go bad, we can cut them up, freeze them. We can saute them. I sometimes saute vegetables and then freeze them like that. And then they're ready to go in omelets or mm-hmm. a casserole. So we can save a lot more food than I think we often do. Yeah. And then I make stock often. So that's another thing. One of the things I noticed in the grocery stores is that the chicken breasts and chicken thighs, all of the conveniently cuts of meat, are just missing off the shelves. There's hardly any left or none left, but the whole chickens are still there. And I think that speaks clearly to what our culture leans towards. They lean towards yeah. all of the convenient cuts. But I was adding it up the other day. If a family of four were to have chicken breasts twice a week, I can't remember. It was like, I think 200 and I can't remember. I don't know the numbers. It was over 200 chickens, maybe around 250 chickens that have to be butchered for those meals.
If you're just buying the individual cuts like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. However, if they were to eat a whole chicken and then also turn it into stock, it was half as many birds would need to be butchered for that family of four. And then they would also have the stock for soup. So,
yeah.
Anyways, I think... Just getting back into that mindset is really good for people.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be more of that, obviously. I mean, with the shortages, potential shortages, I hate to say there will be shortages, but I think without a doubt, we're going to see some price increases on a lot of things just because of, the situations with the factories and things like that that are happening. So, I mean, I think at least going to be some price increases. And I just think that, one of the things that could come from this are people going to be looking to, learn how to cook from scratch a lot more or cook a multiple of dishes, from a single thing, like a chicken, take a whole chicken, like you just mentioned, so often, a family might just eat like two or three of the same chicken dishes a month, over and over and over. And they're going to, right. might be more of a call to buy a whole chicken and learn how to make, a dozen different things from that chicken and really ultimately probably end up eating a lot healthier and probably a lot better, taste and a lot, just get a lot more variety in your diet and a lot more, health based too.
Yes. Yes. A whole chicken can hold in that moisture so much mm-hmm. easier than chicken breasts, which if you overcook them, which is very easy to do, they just become dry and they're not very good as leftovers right. because they're so dry. So yeah, whole chicken is so much better in that regard.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure because you can't have chickens, you're really hating that because it sounds like you really enjoy having whole chickens to work with. But
yes.
But I would imagine there are quite a few people that, small farms or small, just homesteaders even that sell some chickens in your area. I mean, once things kind of somewhat get back to normal, it sounds like you should probably be able to get your hands on some from a local supplier pretty, fairly easily.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how large of a garden are you going to be able to grow where you live?
So it isn't super large right now. So I'm looking at, because we have nearly a quarter acre. The thing is, in our neighborhood, it's all grass, lawns, all out front, and it's pretty when you drive through the neighborhood. There's really this tension of do we become those neighbors, those neighbors who turn that whole front beautiful grass lawn into food, or do we fit in with everybody else? So there's that tension that we face, as I'm sure many are facing.
Yeah, I've had to, I've always grown everything in my backyard, and we acquired the property right next door to us, and it had this wide open front yard. It had a pole barn on the back of the property, and the whole front lawn was just pure grass. There was nothing. And I was thinking the same thing. It's like, do I take this front lawn? Do I make front yard garden out of this? Do I just turn this whole thing into garden? And something else that's happened in the last few years, 3-4 years here, is I became a grandpa. And now I've been thinking, I want a place for my grandkids to play. So we got swing set and I want a little grass for them to play on and stuff like this. And we got a couple dogs. And I thought, I'm going to move the entire garden up to the side of my house over into this front yard and clean out the backyard and just make it a place for the kids to play. And it's been a big decision for me, and I've been doing it. I've moved most of my garden is out up beside my house in my front yard. And what I'm going to actually do with that big wide open space in front of that pole barn is it's going to be a lot more food forest type, like fruit trees and bushes and things like that is what I'm going to plan on doing with that. Because it's not quite as aggressive as all garden, but, you know, having the fruit trees and stuff out there, it gives it that nice tree scenery, and yet it doesn't look overwhelmingly like just a bunch of rows of corn or something.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's been on my mind a lot, too.
Yeah, I've considered fruit trees out front, too. Yeah, I mean, they take a while to grow, so that's the hard part right now. If a food shortage is coming soon, fruit trees, we won't produce anything soon.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's something you have to think about. And, you know, it just, I'm big on, you know, trying to make things look as nice as possible though. I mean, I'm up for anybody gardening their way, but I try to be pretty considerate to my neighbors and I try to make it look as nice as I can when I'm doing it, you know, cause I think that goes a long way with people. You know, if you can make it look presentable, and maybe I shouldn't worry about that as much as I do, but I think that's why you get a lot of problems in the city with growing things and raising animals is because people, there's always those few people who just don't care about what their neighbors think at all. And they just plant everything in any way they can and they're going to eat good, but it doesn't really help the cause much.
Right.
Yeah. I have to face a lot of that.
Yeah.
And very well could be the reason why, you know, you're not allowed to have chickens in your neighborhood, because maybe there's been bad experiences with that in the past where some person had, you know, 100 chickens on a 10-acre lot, you know, and it just smelled and was noisy. And I mean, it could be the case. And maybe there's a reason for that, you know.
Yes. Yes. I did ask our county if we could have meat rabbits on our property, and they said we could because those are considered pets. We just can't create a slaughterhouse or a commercial slaughterhouse on our property.
I'm careful about all that too. I have quail and rabbits and any processing gets done in the garage. I just don't make it on the open doing those things because it will raise eyebrows.
Yes. And then another thing that I was thinking of that people can do with their kitchen scraps, I started taking some of our kitchen scraps and planting them. So the ends of green onions, I just put in soil and start watering, and we can top every meal with green onions. Right
they
now.
Good, yeah. They grew good from that. Celery is another one I see a lot of people doing that with. They'll put celery in water, get it to root, and then, you know, plant celery stalks from the base of the celery. I've seen that done a lot.
Yes. And I've been saving the seeds from squash that I purchased, and also just saving bits of potato to grow. And sweet potato. So I think those are easy because right now a lot of the stores are out of seeds, and not the seed stores. If you look at like Baker Creek and Burpee, they have seeds. But if people are going to Walmart and Target, they're not going to find a lot of seeds right now.
And so
there are ways to gather seeds from your food, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to potatoes too, that's another thing that, you know, you don't have to have a big garden spot to grow potatoes. I mean, you could take those potatoes and they're sprouting and you can put them in buckets, or you can put them in those grow bags and set those around, and they don't take up a lot of space and you can get a pretty good harvest of, I've grew potatoes like that several times, and you can get a decent harvest of potatoes like that.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I've got them in the grow bags right now that have a little opening for harvesting them. So that's convenient.
It just opens up, the bag just opens up and it all just falls out, or what does it do? How do you do that?
It has an opening on the side to be able to reach in and harvest potatoes down near the root. So I don't know. We will see when harvest time comes how that works, because it seems like the dirt will all fall out.
Yeah, well, so it's kind of just designed to just harvest, you know, what you need when you need it and kind of leave the plant intact. Is that what it's designed for?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen those. I mean, I've just seen regular grow bags, you know, that you just pretty much dump out when it's time, but I haven't seen that before. That's pretty interesting.
Yes. And then there are different kinds of garden towers available. I mm-hmm. got one. I'm planning to get a couple more of different types just to try them. But I got one that has a compost area in the center of it.
Yeah.
And you add worms to it. So we did that and then grow all your veggies around it. So
what
it's doing really well.
What kind of things are you growing in that?
So we've got lettuce and kale and herbs and radishes and beets. And what else do I have going on? I know I have starts going on right now of all the melons and tomatoes mm-hmm. and peppers.
Oh, wow.
As well.
Yeah. A lot in that thing. Yeah. How many is it? How tall is that?
I would say it's probably about 4 feet tall.
Okay.
So, yeah.
About five openings around each, you know, every so inch, so many inches high. It's got like four or five openings for planting things or?
Yeah, I would say, I think about six or so openings
okay.
around.
Probably gets smaller mm-hmm. as it goes up. It's probably that many at the bottom and then it goes up. Or is it the same all the way up?
It's the same all the way up on
okay.
this one.
Okay.
And
yeah, I've seen the ones that are more like
a top area.
Like a pine tree. Yeah, that, you know.
Yes. It was a little bit pricey to buy this one. Mm-hmm. And we went and visited Jill Salatin's farm right before quarantine started. We mm-hmm. live an hour and a half away from him. Do you know? Well, you have a quote at the beginning of your podcast by Jill
yep.
Salatin, so I'm
yep.
sure you know who Jill Salatin is. We went to visit his farm, and he had a garden tower like that. It was made out of like the feed barrels.
Mm-hmm.
I think like big barrels. Somebody had handmade a grow tower like that. So
yeah, I've seen them like that. They'll take them to slice them, and they'll use like a heat gun and pull them out and pull out the openings. Yeah, I've seen that done before.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. After I had just spent a couple hundred on one to see that.
Yeah, I think they actually sell like I think they actually sell like these templates. You can I've seen them before that you like a paper template that you wrap around a plastic barrel like that, and you can mark all the places where you cut it, and then you just like I said, take a heat gun and something to pry out on it, and it pulls it out. Yeah, I've seen the templates for that even to make those out of barrels.
Yeah, so. That's very cool.
Yeah, again, that's a great idea for folks who are really limited on space or maybe live in a community that just that's going to frown on turning your whole front yard into a garden or something. I mean, you could set a few of those around the house or around a back patio or on a deck or something like that, and it would probably work, you know, really, really well to grow especially, I would say, greens especially. I mean, you could grow a lot of stuff
yeah.
for salads, you know, and probably have a salad every day in a small family, you know, with a couple of those.
Yes. Yeah. I'd like to try. There are a couple of other types out there, and I thought I'll try a couple different mm-hmm. types of garden towers and see what I like best.
I like that one
yeah.
that you got because it takes you can put like the vermicomposting system in the center of it, like a pipe down the middle of it or whatever. I like the idea of that.
Yes. And then it has little holes from mm-hmm. there that can seep out into the soil. So the worms can move about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I like the idea of that. And it cuts down on, you know, what you're wasting. I mean, again, the replacement to that would have to be build you a big old compost bin out back. So if you had a few of those, if that was the only way you were gardening, you could put do your composting right there in the middle of your beds, and you ain't got a big old stinky compost bin on your property. And, you know, again, it's
right.
for people who are in a situation. It's more ideal for people who are in a situation where they're really limited on what they can do. And so it just goes to show that there are so many things you can do really no matter where you're at. I mean, you can't do everything. You're finding that out with the chickens and other things. You can't do everything,
right.
but there's so much you can do, no doubt about it.
Yes, definitely. Yes. Yeah, I think it's really good, especially right now with the grocery stores just not having quite as much as they used to. And I don't know how long that'll last, but I think it's just good for people to learn how to grow their own food and at least produce some, even if it's not everything. I think it would take more land to grow everything we
oh,
need
yeah.
to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and, you know, again, if you say you do live around a lot of family, you know, if families could join together. Now I'm not saying it's your situation or my situation, but if a lot of people, if they're around a lot of family, you know, this family could choose to grow a few things and really focus on those two or three things. This family could choose to really focus on these two or three things. And then they could, you know, swap out what they're growing for the other stuff. And everybody could be provided with a lot of variety that way when you, if you're limited on space, and work together to grow a lot more like that. And that'd be, you know, be a good plan for folks who have a lot of friends or family around them that you would be willing to do that.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And it's just a way that you could get that variety in on limited space still.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I love that you're writing about all this. What kind of led you to start a blog and you know, focus on all these things? And you know, we wasn't always in a quarantine, of course, and all this stuff wasn't always going on. You've been blogging for a long time. Well, what got you started on that path?
Yeah, I love to write. I've always been a writer since I was a kid. I wrote a lot. And so it was just kind of a natural thing for me. When we started our farm, I started a blog, and just started writing about it and our experiences and what I was learning. There weren't a lot of blogs out then that were showing people how to homestead.
Yeah.
We could, it was 10 years ago that I started writing that blog.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I could pick up homesteading books, but there weren't a lot of bloggers talking about it. So,
well, there's quite a few talking about it now, but very few that are 10 years established. That's for sure.
Yes, true.
Yeah. So I was looking through your blog and you got some great information on there. And I mean, a lot of it is for larger scale, and I'm sure you're going to be probably writing more on the smaller scale now that that's the situation you're in. And you're going to be talking about things you can do where you're at now. So yeah, I'm glad to see that you're really doing that to help people out. And it kind of, you know, I find that blogging, I mean, I do it. Part of why I do it is definitely to encourage other people to do it and to help them do it. But I also do it because it kind of motivates me, you know, and it keeps me thinking and, you know, and kind of pushing the limits and seeing what I can do. And I enjoy that part of it, too.
Yes. Yeah. And farming can, and homesteading, even in a neighborhood, can be a bit of a fun experiment, too. Like today, I added some bits of kombucha SCOBY to some of my tomato starts and didn't add it to others, and I can watch that and see what happens and then write about it and share. And I just think it's a fun experiment, and I think it's so good to share that wisdom with other people and pass that down.
Well, now I'm curious if that's going to work good or not. I've dropped some SCOBYs on the garden before, but I never really kind of like separated to see the experiment, you know, to see if it worked better for one than the other. I've just kind of tossed them in the garden beds before. But yeah, now you got me interested in wondering how well does that work? Because I always have a lot of SCOBYs left over.
Yes. And water kefir grains, I can't find anybody talking about adding that to the garden. So I'm going to try it. Because water kefir, I bought a little. It was probably just a couple of tablespoons, maybe a quarter cup worth, for $11. And then I started making it every week. And I have like 3 cups of grains in my fridge now because it just multiplies. And so if I can find ways to use that and produce more food with it, that would be great.
Now, I've talked about a few times on this podcast in the past about making kombucha and stuff, but I've never done water kefir. Can you tell me just a little bit about the process of that and how that's kind of done?
Yeah, it's really easy. So you just basically make a simple syrup out of sugar. So I did that. We had a bag of brown sugar that was too hard. Couldn't be really used for baking anymore. Mm-hmm. So I just put it in a pot of water and cooked it down. And then I poured it into a jar and put it in the fridge and labeled it with the date. And then just every 3 days, I have a clean pitcher. I put about a quarter cup of the kefir grains in it. I put about a quarter cup of that brown sugar mixture in it, that simple syrup that I made, and then fill the rest with water. I put plastic wrap over it and then set it out on the counter for 3 days, and then strain the grains out of it and reuse them again. And then sometimes what I do, my family really likes this, is that kefir, that the water kefir that I just made, I'll add a couple of frozen strawberries to it and then put a lid on it and put it in the fridge, and it gets really fizzy, like pop.
Yeah.
But Yeah, but it's really good for you. So.
Wow, sounds good. Yeah, I've never drank it. I mean, I've heard of it, obviously, but I've just never. I wasn't really sure about the process of it. I haven't really looked it up. It didn't sound that good to me before, but now it's kind of sounding kind of good. I kind of want to try it now. I mean, does it have like a, is the ferment taste probably similar to kombucha in the kind of that ferment taste? Is it something like that, or is it? Can you kind of explain it a little bit?
It's similar to kombucha. I would say it's a little milder, actually.
Okay.
So maybe a little easier to get people who aren't used to that flavor into it. It contains billions of probiotics in it.
Yeah.
And I was purchasing coconut water kefir from Whole Foods for $18 for a bottle from the refrigerated section. And then using just a little tiny bit at a time, little shots of it for good gut health. And I thought, why can't I make this myself? And so I started to, and I make it every other time. I will make it with coconut water or plain water. So can make it either way.
But it takes on flavor profiles pretty good. Like you said, you put strawberries in it, so it'll absorb those flavor profiles pretty good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I'm definitely going to try this. That sounds really good.
Yeah, my kids ask for it. Usually, so we homeschool, kind of like everybody has to right now. But my kids kind of mid-morning will all, pull out some glasses and make our concoctions. Sometimes I'll mix kombucha and water kefir, sometimes just do one or the other. But we all have some mid-morning, let's just start thing to keep us going and getting through the school day.
Yeah, that sounds great. I know there's like milk kefir too, isn't there? I mean, I've seen it before. I've never drank it either.
Yes. And that's, it's like yogurt. It's like a liquid yogurt, but it's got even a lot more probiotics in it than yogurt does.
Yeah.
It's really simple too.
I bet it has a lot stronger taste though. I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a yogurt type drink, and so it's good for smoothies.
It actually took me a little while to get used to kombucha. Now, I don't like store-bought kombucha, but I like homemade kombucha. Like when I make it at home, it's pretty good. But for some reason, when I buy the stuff, I've bought it at the store before, and I mean, I have to pour it out sometimes. Sometimes it depends on what flavor I get, but some of it is so strong and so, I mean, I just can't drink it. So for a long time, I tried a couple from the stores and I didn't like it. So I didn't think I'd ever like it. And then finally I decided I'm going to try to make some and I made some and I was like, well, this ain't bad. And then you even adjust to it more. The more you drink it, the more you like it. And I like, now I really, really like it. And I imagine it's like that with everything. But you say the water kefir is a lot more mild, so I bet kids and would like it better because it just wouldn't be as strong.
Yes, right. And I started doing perpetual kombucha, so I just have a big glass jar with a spigot on it. It's one of the really large ones, and it's out on the counter and has the kombucha in it. And I just once or twice a week I'll make a big pot of sweet tea. Let it cool down, and then I'll just add it.
Oh, and it
to
just
that
keeps
jar.
It just continually keeps on going that way, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. I've seen some people do that. I mean, I've seen like they have like a crock with a spigot on it, and then they'll do that in a crock or something. But yeah, I've seen that, and it works pretty good, I guess. I've never tried it. It sounds easier because it's always kind of a process mixing up a big old jar of it every week or two. Or I usually we do a jar a week usually, a big gallon jar of it a week.
Yeah. Yeah, we have 5 kids, and so we can go through it
more.
Pretty quickly. So,
can you do that with the water kefir also? You have to mix it. You have to make it separately.
So I don't know. I haven't tried that yet. That's a good question because you do have to strain off some of the grains.
That's true.
Because those grains eat the sugar, and I think just the amount of grains because they keep multiplying. I think if there were too many grains and not enough sugar, it would be a different flavor.
When you do your kombucha that way, does it, like when you first add it, is it like, does it change the strength of the drink like at first and until it like re-ferments a little bit more or anything like that? Does it take a little while to even out?
Yeah, it does. It can taste a little sweeter for the first day or two.
Okay.
the kids really like that, actually.
Yeah, all that sugar hasn't been eaten up yet. So, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. Yeah. I'd seen it done before, but I've always wondered. I thought, it seems like it would, you know, it wouldn't be fully fermented, of course, at first. So it would change that flavor back and forth. And it would just have this constant, you know, it wouldn't really even out very quick, I would think.
Right.
Just sweet tea.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I read somewhere that it actually ferments faster that way, but I'm not sure scientifically how that would work. Why? If it's in a big pitcher like that, why is it fermenting faster? I don't know.
I bet the SCOBYs grow in it a lot faster than they do in just a single serving jar.
Yeah, it's pretty large. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think that you'd be digging them out of there constantly because they would just be like a constant flow of them, which is good because you need to use them on your garden, it sounds like.
Yes, which is what I did this morning. I just cut some SCOBY off and, yep.
Well, it sounds like you're doing some really great things there. I mean, even though you feel limited, of course, I mean, after coming from a 30-acre farm, I mean, and realizing all the things you can't do, I'm really happy to hear that you're finding a lot of things you can do where you're at and you're doing them. And you're not even just satisfied with that. You're wanting to encourage other people to do those things as well. I mean, you reached out to me because you have a heart for this stuff. You want people to know that there's things they can do right where they're at.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yes. I think it's really important for people to learn how to grow at least some of their own food. And just, I feel like too, there's so much pleasure in being able to sit down to a meal and know that you grew something yourself that's on your plate that you get to consume.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's such a
amazing
great experience.
Feeling. Yeah, it is. It's something that if you've never experienced it, it's hard to explain. But to look down on your plate and think that all came from here, you know, even if you're on a small place or whatever, just to think that your meal or even a majority of your meal came from your backyard, that is a truly amazing feeling. And I, like I said, I just don't think people understand that unless they've ever experienced it. It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And I imagine there's a lot of people who, you know, feel a little helpless right now. They're like, I don't live in a place where I feel like I can do a whole lot. And with the situation, the way things are right now, and they may feel a little helpless. And I think it's great that people like you and me and others want to encourage them to say, no, there's some things you can do. And, you know, there's some places, there's some places you can go to get some information on how to get started doing those things.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And I think it's good for people like us who are living it, who are in the midst of it, to write it out practically for people or speak it like you're doing on a podcast. Sometimes I think the homesteading books can be a bit overwhelming and high level, and they don't get into the nitty gritty details.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like it's from the sky view kind of look at things instead of, you know, really getting down into the dirt with them. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and when a book is trying to cover every single subject, all the fruits and all the vegetables and all of the animals in one thick book, they can only devote a page or two to, you know, raspberries or whatever. But it's just, I found it's not quite enough sometimes. So I think it's really good to when we get that kind of knowledge, just to share it, pass it on.
Well, and the way the world is kind of set up now, it's set up in an internet format. I mean, whatever specific thing you're working on, what do? You go Google it and you find the information about that thing. And mostly that comes from blog posts and things like that. So it's what we use today to get that information. So I'm glad people are writing about those things like you. I mean, glad you're writing about those things and helping people gain that knowledge that they need at the time, because you can get a book and you can always go look it up. But I mean, I know me, my first thing to do when I'm wondering about something is I just Google it, you know?
Yes. And I found too, just even, so I have a Facebook community for the Well-Fed Homestead and it's pretty active. I find that people just finding their tribe of people that get it, that are living out the same thing, really helps people to not just look at a book or just look at a website.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, that's funny because that conversation just happened in our group a couple days ago where, you know, people were saying, you know, because there's always those people say you can just Google that, you know, because they ask a question. But you know what? Sometimes you want some community. Sometimes you want to talk to people about their own personal experience, or sometimes you just want to carry on a conversation with another, with a fellow homesteader and get that information directly from them. It's easier to Google, but it's something special about actually carrying on that conversation with somebody, you know?
Yes, I agree. I agree. I think it's so sad in some of like social media groups when somebody asks a question and other people say, well, you can Google that.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
They reached out for a reason.
They know that. They want to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Well, your blog is The Well-Fed Homestead, and it sounds like even though you were on 30 acres before, it was, you know, you were able to provide an abundance of food for your family and stuff. It sounds like you're going to be able to still provide, you know, a lot of things to provide a well-fed, you know, homestead again, even on a smaller scale. I mean, so I'm glad to see that you're going to be able to accomplish that, even though on a smaller level. And write about it and encourage others to head down that path. So just thanks a lot for what you're doing. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for what you're doing. This is a great podcast that you're sharing with the world.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. And it sounds like you have the Facebook. Is it Well-Fed Homestead, like a Facebook group or something that you have too? Is that what that is?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. I think... Yeah, the name of it currently might be Brenda Scott Author, but if you search Well-Fed Homestead, you'll find it as well.
Okay.
I'm trying to get Facebook to change the name of it to the Well-Fed Homestead, but yes.
Okay, well, I'll definitely get links to those things, your website, your blog, and your Facebook group, and in the show notes, and I'm going to encourage people to really be a part of that because it sounds like you're doing some really great stuff over there.
Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking to us today.
Thank you.
Great interview. Thank you, Brenda, for coming on the podcast and sharing a little bit about your story. I know that you feel like you're not in an ideal situation, but you also felt as though you had something to share with this community. And that's that, you know, just because you're in a situation that isn't ideal and just because you're not on 30 acres, it doesn't mean there's not things you can do, you know, and there are definitely things you can do to homestead right where you're at. So do those things. Do everything you can where you're at right now. It's what I've always said since the beginning, and it's always great when I have someone on here that's experiencing that and kind of backs me up on that. And I know most homesteaders believe that there's a lot you can do, even if you don't have a lot of land. But it's always great to hear multiple people give witness to that and tell about all the things they're doing. So thanks again for coming on. Thanks for being an encouragement to the audience. I really appreciate it. And I'll definitely have those links to her website, wellfedhomestead.com, and her Facebook group that she mentioned in the show notes. So check those out if you want to go pay her a visit and see all the great things she's writing and get involved in that Facebook group. I think it's really good. Also, don't forget that you can support this podcast by being a Patreon member over at Patreon. .com. We have our page. I'll have links to that in the show notes as well. And for just a little bit of help, you get extra podcasts. You know, I just loaded a podcast up this week and I've done it the previous couple weeks. We just started this 3-4 weeks ago. So, you know, there's not a ton of stuff in there, but you're getting some extra podcasts. You're getting discounts to some products. You're getting my book, From Home to Small Town Homestead, in PDF format for free if you would like that. And, you know, if you're a new homesteader, that's a great book for someone who's looking to evaluate what they can do on their property, even in a situation like an urban or suburban situation. Also, I wanted to mention that if you're not getting it already, the Modern Homesteading Magazine that's put together by Anna Sikowski, she was on the podcast a while back. She has a blog called The House and Homestead, and you can go to her website and get that magazine for free right now. And I was featured in the May edition. Talking a little bit about growing on a small lot, talking a little bit about Victory Gardens. And it's a good article. I mean, I had fun doing the interview with her, so you might want to go check that out and head on over to her website and subscribe to that magazine. I think it's a great addition. She always has a lot of great information in there every month. It comes out every month, and it's just been packed full of just great stuff. So go check out that magazine. I think you'll really enjoy it. And thanks, Anna, for the interview and the opportunity to contribute to your magazine. I really appreciate that. Well, that's all I have for today, folks. I really do thank you for joining me today. And until next week, happy homesteading and God bless. I hope you enjoyed this episode. To learn more or find more episodes, just head on over to haroldthornbro.com. Thanks for listening.